irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy hot Monday, Los Angeles. Holy moly, it's about 104 in the valley where we're at. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to tune in today to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I'm very pleased to have a couple of special guests on the show. One of our favorite guest hosts, Allison Garrido, is here and has joined us to conduct a mock interview for our Mock Interview Monday series. For those of you just tuning in, the last Monday of every month, we invite a job seeker who's currently in the market for a position to come in and conduct a mock interview with us and get live coaching directly after the interview takes place. So today we have a job seeker here by the name of Oscar. Oscar has over 15, 20 years of business development and marketing experience, and our guest host, Allison, is going to go ahead and conduct the interview. So if you haven't tuned in before, Allison is a passionate career coach. She spends a lot of her time helping her clients identify their strengths and create a path towards a fulfilling career. She provides intensive resume review and interview preparation. And Allison also, we actually originally had connected when she worked in HR for one of the clients that I worked with as a recruiter. And during her time in HR, she coached staff members at all level around performance reviews, facilitated offsite and in-house trainings. She now facilitates original workshop series for those making career transitions. And in fact, we'll talk about this a little bit later. I think Allison has an upcoming webinar that'll be next week. So I'd like to welcome Allison and Oscar to the show, and we'll go ahead and get started.
Thank you so much for having me, Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
All right, well, we'll get right to it. Oscar, thank you so much for coming in today for an interview.
Thank you both for having me here. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. So I have your resume here in front of me, but I'd love for you to tell me about yourself and walk me through it a little bit.
Okay. Well, my experience started with a large CPA firm. Actually, it was the number one accounting firm in the world. And I was offered an internship as a sophomore. I was offered a full position with them my junior year, which I had to reject because I had to concentrate with school. And my senior year, again, I was offered the position, which I took. And that got me started really in marketing and everything that happened after that. Prior to that, I was studying to become an attorney.
Oh, wow.
So when I left Arthur Andersen, because as everyone knows, it went under because of different companies at Enron and Star and WorldCom. Anyways, I moved from that industry and I went into pet publishing. I did that for a few years and had a lot of great challenges that I had to overcome to sell a trade magazine in the pet publishing industry with no subscription based. It was all ad sales. So I did a lot of that, guerrilla marketing, and really built a lot of skill set in web development and graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
Also databases. I really did a lot of targeted marketing, which required us to be able to pull the right information out from our current list that we had. About 3 years into that, I decided I wanted to get back into the corporate world, and although that pet publishing firm was great, I just felt that I was better suited for more of a corporate environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to join both my passions, which was legal because I wanted to be an attorney, and marketing because I fell in love with it. So I delved into the legal world and started working at a firm in Century City that went really well. And that's kind of what brought me here into the legal world, and I've been here for the last 15 years.
Okay, so you've spent the last 15 years in legal and marketing.
Yes.
Okay, and as you, I see that it looks like you were in one role from 2008 to 11, and then only 1 year, 2012 to 2013, then 1 year, 2013 to 14, and then 1 year, 2014 to 2015. So tell me about those kind of changes in jobs every year.
Well, to be honest, I never thought that I'd be, that I have been in so many different positions or so many different firms. But when you look at my career, there is a a connector that kind of helps explain why I have been at multiple firms. When I started in legal, I started working with a great direct marketing director, and he is amazing. He's very well known in the industry, and he taught me a lot while I was with him at the firm, let's call this firm E. Mm-hmm. And while at firm E, I really delved into marketing and legal marketing as well. But when he left 2.5 years later, it was a great firm to be at, and I was offered the manager's position there. Mm-hmm. But right around the same time, he brought me along to the new firm that he was at. So let's call that company D, mm-hmm. and our firm D. And so I continued my career learning from him. He was a friend and a mentor, and still to this day, kind of circles back, and I've been doing marketing consulting with him now. But after that, after 6-7 years with him at Company D, I really felt, and with his blessing, that I wanted to go in and run my own department. Mm-hmm. And so I moved on to what we would call now Company C, where I was given the opportunity to really take over department and make sure that all the marketing infrastructure was there and build that to the point where we could then start doing some great business development with the attorneys. And so I did that for a few years there. From Company C, again, you saw that gap. It was about 1.5 years. I moved on to Company B, where I was actually given the role as the lead or the marketing director. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so here, I took that opportunity and really thought to myself that I needed to be the person that could educate the attorneys as well as my employers, my direct supervisor, mm-hmm. on what marketing is and how I could help and what the firm needed as far as marketing. Unfortunately, what we realized was that what they needed was something a little bit more junior, mm-hmm. not a director. They needed to use the resources for the infrastructure. They were not quite ready to take on the business development side of it. And so, you know, a few months into that that opportunity, unfortunately, I had to transition out. Mm-hmm. I did keep them on as a client so I could do the day-to-day work for them, but I wanted to move forward into marketing consulting, which again ties me back into the director, mentor, friend of that I worked with for so many years, who launched his own firm and wanted me to help him both help launch his firm and then continue and do consulting for his new clients. So that's where I've been for the last few years.
Nice. You mentioned that there was a gap of 1.5 years. Tell me about why did you leave that role before the gap?
Before the gap. Okay, so if we're talking about from the Company B to A, it really had to do with what kind of a little bit I was talking earlier. I think as the marketing director or marketing manager, the lead marketing person, it's your job to educate people on what marketing is, mm-hmm. and how to best use it so that you can implement some great business development and start generating some great leads and start, you know, eventually bringing in more revenue. Mm-hmm. What came out of the conversations that I was having with them and the needs that the firm had was the reality that it was not they did not need a marketing director at that time.
Okay.
What they needed was someone, again, more junior that can do the day-to-day printing, putting together packets, putting an event together. Absolutely nothing wrong with that, but I just felt, and I let them know that it was better use of their resources, their money that they were investing, in something that it was more appropriate for them.
That makes sense. Thank you very much. You mentioned this mentor repeatedly. He clearly had a huge impact on your career and life.
And still does, yes.
That's great. Tell us, what was the most important lesson that you learned working with him?
I think it was that. What he really taught me was that as the marketing lead, the person that's in charge of the marketing initiatives, you need to be able to educate your clients, which in our case would be attorneys, and also your employer, which would be your direct supervisor. You need to be able to educate them on what the needs are. Now, that has a lot of components in it, you know, from an attorney being able to teach them and put them in the best light, to yourself and educating your supervisor on how to better build up the infrastructure that's needed. Jonathan, or my mentor, he is a great big picture type person, you know, and I learned that although I live in the immediate and the projects that are now, I needed to open myself up for the big picture of what's ahead and be able to take the department with me, as well as my supervisors or my direct hires, so that we can, you know, again, it all comes back to revenue. You want to be able to help the attorneys sell themselves better and ultimately gain better relationships that will lead to more work in the future.
Absolutely. So the role that you're interviewing for today, we have a job description for you, and it's a senior business development manager. It's for a firm of about 20 attorneys. And so your job would be business development, right? Bringing in more revenue, more clients. Tell me, what ideas do you have on how you might be able to do that?
I think for me, it is currently the state of our industry is that we are living in a world where marketing and business development are one. And so I see it twofold. There has to be cross-marketing internally and also externally, meaning with firms outside of your own. So internally, that means that I, as the marketing lead, need to be aware of all the expertise that we have, all the industries that we work in, so that when a potential lead comes through, I can put together the best team, not necessarily the only the team that's expert in that field, but there might be a need to bring in, you know, a cross-marketing with a different practice area. And I need to be able to identify those so that we can, you know, better help each other gain more leads and retain our clients and make sure that they're, you know, satisfied with our work. Second, when I say external marketing, there has to be a lead like myself, who will go out there and speak with other professional services, such as financial services, accounting firms, banks. You know, we're talking about all of the different types of professional services that live in the same world that we do, that have the same type of clients, that are not competing with us. We need to be able to cross-market with them, and again, put together events, whether it's, you know, depending on the strengths of my attorneys, whether it's writing, whether it's speaking at a panel, or presenting in any different type of light, we can come together as a package and really target. Myself, I found, and I'm gonna put this out there, I think it's a new and innovative way of doing it. I haven't seen it done much, but I really like to get external cross-marketing with different firms, having them bring really quality potential clients and clients to an event, let's say 5-10 people, and there's, you know, 5-6 of us at a panel. We now have a very targeted 6 or 60 potential clients that we can really talk to, and they're here because they're looking for the types of services that we offer. And it's a better way, I think, than to blanket the industry and try to do a panel for 500 people, and you don't really make that relationship connection. So.
Gotcha. So I hear that you want to focus on a targeted group of our ideal clients instead of marketing to the masses.
Yes, I think it takes me back when I was marketing the pet publishing firm. The trade magazine I had no revenue stream. I mean, all they had was advertising, and at the time were not very well known. So we really needed to build that, and to do that we had to partner with different, you know, outside of the magazine, we had to find different leads. And it took me into databases, which is one of my strong suits. I have that technology side of marketing where I like to know where the information goes in so that I can be the one that pulls it out and uses it in the correct way. And yes, it's more of a targeted marketing rather than just, you know, blanket the industry, like I said before.
Great. It's great to know that you like database management. We're actually implementing a CRM, our client relations management system. So is that something that you're familiar with?
Yes, and just because I've already researched, you do have the same CRM, which is very common within the legal industry, and it's the number one, actually. I'm very well trained in it, and have used it at 3 different firms, have implemented it myself from scratch once already, and the size firms that I've been at have been at about 100 attorneys, so for me to be in a 20-attorney firm would be such a great thing, because I can actually implement all of these ideas and have more time to work directly with each individual attorney.
That's great. I'm so pleased to hear that you've done such extensive research on our firm. That's very helpful. So you mentioned partnering with other organizations to do some cross promotion. Can you tell me about a time when you have done that and saw that be really successful?
There's quite a few, but one that really sticks out for me is partnering with a CPA firm who had an ongoing happy hour, I guess I would call it. They have their own little gimmick with that. And it was going great, but they wanted to introduce a partner into this, and they wanted to bring in a different type of audience for this happy hour. So again, we partnered with them and created a more intimate setting for these happy hours. So it was more of a, again, targeted client list, and I helped actually the CPA firm, I helped them with their database so that we could pull out this list of people that were potentially interested in our legal services, and then again showed them how or what I would do to pull potential client interest from our database for them. And when they were both happy with that, we went again out and invited these people. They were very receptive to it because they're our clients. We know their needs. Mm-hmm. And the people they invited, those are their clients and they know their needs. So we had a very captive audience of people that were interested in both a good CPA firm and good legal representation. So it makes for, I think, a better conversation. And even amongst themselves, we found that the conversations they were having were more targeted towards immediate needs rather mm-hmm. than, you know, just inviting someone to hear someone speak. I mean, to be honest, I think it's more of a win-win when somebody comes in with a need and they get a little bit of expertise. So you're giving them something. You're not just asking them to come and listen to you. You're actually giving them something at this event. I heard this being coined somewhere, and I think it's a very interesting, but I've adapted it into my my line of work, and it's experiential marketing. Mm-hmm. I think people remember you when you and them experience something together that's memorable and different. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I try to do at all these different types of events.
Perfect. Thank you. So we've talked a lot about bringing in new business and finding leads. Tell me, what are some kind of proven tactics that you've used to retain clients that are already with us?
To retain clients, I think that has a lot to do with, again, the internal cross-marketing. And so we have clients. We know their needs. But a lot of times we, as a firm, don't talk to each other and we don't identify all of the expertise that we have. So what I try to do is have ongoing either lunch and learns or get-togethers where the firm has the group of attorneys come together, and we will have one person just kind of in a very light setting reintroduce himself to the firm. And one key thing that has to happen, I think, is the young attorneys, the young associates need to be involved, because we want them, these are our future, you know, business generating stream, and we want them to understand what everyone does so that they can bring up those opportunities when current clients have a need, not to let that lead go out of the firm. A lot of times we do that. They will pass that on to someone because they don't know that we have that. They don't know we do IP. Mm-hmm. They don't know we do, you know, contracts for construction in this case. So a lot of times we let a lot of that business go. And I think as the marketing person, it's your job to make sure that everybody's informed about what we do.
Sounds like you're practicing that experiential marketing both externally and internally.
Yes, I think to me that's the key right now, and that's where our industry is going, is to experiential marketing. We want people to be, we want to be memorable in a good way, and we want to start building relationships with people.
Absolutely. It's important always to provide value, and it sounds like you're providing a lot of value to
yes.
the internal and external customers. So you've had a long career in business development and marketing, and I'd love to hear, what is your proudest achievement throughout your career?
Okay, so at Company C, I believe, yes, there was a need, or actually it was more than a need. Our database had a really bad reputation. And we wanted to change that. There was a need for the database, so we couldn't get rid of it, and there was a lot of money already invested in it. So what I did is I took that database, which is a very well-known in the industry, and I rebranded it. And so I learned all about it and streamlined the actual information that goes in, and then I changed the look and feel of it. Now, I didn't lie to anyone. I trained everyone on the new database, and I let them know, hey, this is the same database, but it has been custom and tailored by me for your needs, and I got rid of all of the stuff that was, you know, clogging us up. And I've decided to call it, and with Jonathan's help, we called it CPR, which means clients, prospects, relationship. And we were going to bring new life into your contacts. And so we did an internal campaign, and it was very successful. I mean, people, when I left, had adapted it to the point where I trained everyone. I trained the staff. I trained the attorneys, of course, their secretaries, and the receptionist, and accounting. And I showed them where all of their roles played. That's not the way I want to word it, but how their roles played into how the data was put in and brought out, and how that could really help us generate new business. So where the secretary, I trained them, or the executive assistants, I trained them on how to pull information out of their attorneys so that they can put more information in that the attorney did not even think to tell them about. But, you know, it was just about having a conversation with them. You went to the seminar, you met so-and-so. How did that go? They didn't have to tell them, hey, I'm going to take this and start putting it into the database. But later on, when that attorney called that same person, there was notes for him there already. You spoke about this, you spoke about that. And you could actually get the executive assistants could take part in this relationship building. And we no longer had a Rolodex. We now had a living, breathing database that we could for relationship management. And I think that's key. In marketing, that's what we do. We help people build relationships. And you have to want to be interested. You have to want to help the other person and put your part. I think a relationship, people think, I'm going to go to this event, meet some people, and then stuff is going to start flowing to me.
Right.
No. You need to go to an event, take the interest of the people that are there, see how you can help them, and then things will flow. And so when people start learning, I think that's when we start seeing more revenue coming in and more leads being generated.
Thank you. And our last question, since you will be leading the marketing efforts, tell me, what's your management style? How do you manage a team?
Well, I personally like to not micromanage. I think I have worked best in that setting. I think when you hire the right person and you can trust them in what they do, you're able to let them be the best, you know, version of themselves. Of course, with some safeguards in there that help you make sure that you're getting the best, you know, possible scenario out of it. But ultimately, I think micromanaging is not a great way of doing things, especially in marketing. I think we're all very free and open, and we have great ideas. We need to be let not loose. That would be the wrong word to say. But you know what I'm saying. You need to have that freedom to have great ideas and implement them.
Great. Thank you so much. So it's the end of the interview, but I want to give you a chance to ask your questions. So why don't you just quickly tell me the questions that you might have if this was a real interview?
Well, I think if this was a real interview, I'd want to delve into the firm and what their current marketing situation is, how I can, in my mindset, I would be seeing how I can best help that. Mm-hmm. I'd love to know about business development and what's going on in the short term. And in the long term, what's the 5-year plan? Because I want to make sure that it is something that that is manageable. I mean, you want to, I think, I'd love to go into a position where there is that opportunity where we want a great plan in place, but within reasonable means. I mean, we want to assess everything correctly. Lastly, I always ask about the culture. I think I'm looking for a home, so I think I want to know a little bit about the people, how they get along, and really see if possibly there's a way that we can take a little tour of the office space. Generally speaking, most people always say yes, and I get a lot out of that from walking the space and seeing how people interact.
Wonderful. Well, Oscar, thank you so much for coming in today. We will be in touch about next steps.
Sorry for the jitters. I'm a little nervous.
No, Not at all.
Great job, guys. That was a lot of fun. How did that feel, Oscar?
It's a little nerve-wracking, but I really do love interviewing, so I look forward to the feedback.
Awesome. Okay. So if you were to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being you knocked it out of the ballpark, best interview you could have ever done, and 1 being could use a little bit of work, how would you rate yourself?
I think 6.
Okay.
I think that I was I had the ideas that I wanted to get out, and I lost a few of them. I didn't know how to bring it back. So that's kind of where I felt that I not failed, but
had a room to grow.
Yes.
I think that's great. And one of the reasons I ask people that after an interview is because it really helps to reflect on yourself. Allison and I will give you our feedback, but at the same time, I think intuitively we know a lot about ourselves of, oh gosh, I could have done that a little bit better. And I think by just bringing your own awareness and attention to it, it can already start the process of going, gosh, how could I have been more effective at that? One thing that's interesting that I would love to get Allison's two cents on, I noticed at the end there was just a very even keeled tone to the whole interview, and that's one thing I was going to talk to you about. You have such a almost rhythmic voice that's very soothing. You'd make a damn good massage therapist or hypnotist. But there were times where, because of the lack of vacillation in the tone of your voice, I didn't always capture the amazing things you were saying, except at the end, there was definitely a peak. When you started talking about that CRM database, the entire energy of how you sounded, I would definitely go back and listen to the interview, shifted, and I was paying attention and hanging on every word you were saying, mm-hmm. because you could tell you really lit up about it, and you were owning how great and fantastic and what you did and what an accomplishment it was. And so that for me was probably the highlight of it. And one thing you may want to play with for future interviews, find an opportunity to insert that example as early on as possible in the interview, because I think that'll energetically set up your interview very differently, and it'll start it on a high note. And then if you can keep at that same level, it's just going to keep the audience, whoever that might be, more engaged with you. What were your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I'm working with someone right now, actually, who we did a mock interview just privately.
Yeah. Not on a podcast exactly. In front of 10,000 listeners, but exactly. Hats off to you, Oscar.
So we were doing a mock interview, and I could feel that she was really trying to give the right answers. And once she really started to speak authentically and just say what was happening, like almost like speak from the heart, it was a completely different tone. So I wonder if you think more about, what do I want them to know about me, as opposed to what is the right thing to say for this job? Because when you started to give examples, like Jennifer said, I mean, it was
night and day.
I was like on the edge of my seat listening to you, and I could feel, and I know that people could hear it on the podcast, but I mean, I could see your whole demeanor just change.
Shift.
Absolutely. So as much as you can just be authentic and be yourself and recall real life examples that show things, I think that that's really a valuable, valuable tool.
And one thing too that I noticed that's really interesting is there's a slight tendency to over-explain things, whether it's your reasons for leaving or even as you got into that good example, towards the end, it kind of tapered off. And one thing I think that you had mentioned to us before you came in is you said, gosh, well, most interviews are supposed to go 45 minutes to an hour, and my interviews typically go about an hour and a half. What's really interesting from the recruiting side of things, because I've been recruiting 13 years, yes, a good amount of times, if the interview goes longer, that can be a very good thing. But I'll never forget, I had one woman who had a 30-minute interview and was hired on the spot, and she just was able to get her point across and be succinct, because I think when you're on that high and you're hitting those points, you really want to leave it at that really high note and just feel into it naturally, and that way you leave them with that example instead of kind of tapering it off and then losing a little bit of the momentum.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what happened to me. I felt that I had given a great example and did not know how to just stop it there.
Mm. Can I give you some feedback on that? All right, so if I were in your position and somebody said, Oscar, tell me about your greatest achievement, I would say, gosh, you know, the one thing I'm probably most proud of in my career, at Firm C, we had this database that nobody wanted to touch with a 10-foot pole. It was misunderstood, even though it was one of the most widely used databases in the industry, nobody wanted to use it, and we weren't generating revenue because of that. So what I did is I worked with one of my mentors, we completely rebranded what it was called to CPR, to resuscitate the clients, and it was fantastic because we got the buy-in of the assistants who worked with the attorneys. That way they could partner together, and that way anytime an attorney got on the phone, they didn't even have to think twice about it because the assistant already had that specialized knowledge in there, and they were able to create this great rapport, which in turn generated probably 20% more business that year. And that was what was missing for me from your whole interview, and it wasn't bad. I want to be very clear. Like you said, there were just certain things that were missing. For me, if I'm going to hire a business development person, I want percentages. I want numbers. And there was a lot that you gave that was vague and like, oh, in this situation, I might handle it like this. And even with the database experience, I loved what you said. I mean, every aspect of that was brilliant. And the point that could have driven it home, and that year they generated 10% more revenue than the year before. Sold. You're my guy. That's it.
So, and we know those numbers. I mean, yeah. As a marketing person, we keep track of all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as much as you can, and obviously be authentic, the really important thing for anybody listening out there, don't falsify information.
Right.
Even if it was just 5%, that's still a huge increase. So just make sure to be very specific about the results. What one of the things we talk about in my company is PEP, P-E-P, productivity, efficiency, and performance. And as Allison would call it, I think you call it your SOAR examples.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But employers want to hire people with PEP. They want to hire people who are going to increase productivity, efficiency, and performance. And the more you can give succinct, concrete, measurable results, the more you're going to stand out. Because I know you have those.
Thank you. It's definitely eye-opening.
Yeah, and so Allison, I'm sure you have some other thoughts too.
Yeah, I think to expand on that, a good exercise to get those results at top of mind is if you go through your resume, you can ask yourself when you look at the bullets, why might this matter to an employer? And that's the long Allison version because I'm not too curt, but a lot of people say at the end of every bullet, you should ask yourself, so what?
Yeah, that's great. I love that.
I would say, why might this matter to an employer? So what's probably quicker for you to write down? And that's going to start getting you thinking more toward results. And it'll get those ideas and those results right at top of mind. So I think of interviews as a lot of times you have all these stories floating around in your head. And it's just a matter of which one you grab at which time.
Yes. Yes, I think that's, especially when you asked me that question, I did have four or five things in mind, and I think the one that I picked was probably not the one that I explained the best. That was one that required a lot of explanation, where I think I should have picked one that was, you know, quick and easy to explain, and also again helped with the generating more revenues. Mm-hmm. But it was just. That's
don't beat yourself up. Here's the thing is that there is no good or bad or right or wrong. It's just you have a chance here to look at, oh, what could I do that I could add mm-hmm. to this? Look at it as an opportunity to add to things. How could I enhance this? How could I make it even more memorable? Like you said, you know, you were talking about what was experiential marketing mm-hmm. and making yourself memorable in a positive way. And some of the ways we do this, like imagine if I even did the whole podcast and I kept my tone like this the whole time. Which is a really great trait to have. But I remember there was an exercise somebody had me do one time before where you were supposed to practice being 10 times more excited. And even just doing some face exercises, I know we've had some wonderful coaches on the show. Larry Brayman was one. Mm-hmm. And even John Rubinow, who was on the show last week, just talking about moving your face and moving your eyes and just working with that will naturally cause a little bit more emphasis on certain words that can just have you stand out a little bit more.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that if when you are starting to talk about, you know, what you might do for as far as experiential education, or experiential marketing, just use the opportunity to insert your own example.
Yeah.
Because storytelling is such an impactful tool, right? And it gets people, instead of speaking in abstracts of this is what I might do, you could say, this is what I might do. And I saw this work at firm C when I did this. So I think that will get you out of your head a little bit of thinking, what would I do? What would I do? To think like, what have I done? Because that's what you'd probably do again if you saw success. And I think there's opportunities for you to maybe fold that in when you're doing the tell me about yourself. The tell me about yourself felt like a lot of facts, and there was a lot of opportunity to add the heart part.
Okay.
Great observation.
So like, what do you love about marketing and business development? Clearly, and it showed up, I think, later than it needed to. Clearly, you love the relationship part. And you love making things really easy for people to understand. You use the word education a lot in the beginning, but it didn't come to life until you started talking about how you made this new database really easy for people to understand and absorb.
And I'll always remember that, Oscar. I mean, mm-hmm. that was such brilliant storytelling. Mm-hmm. I've never even heard of somebody doing that specific thing where mm-hmm. they enroll the secretaries and get the buy-in. I just thought that was brilliant. It was so memorable the way you did that, that if you approached that whole interview with that same enthusiasm and specificity, I think that you would just nail and blow out of the ballpark any interview you did.
Well, I'm really enjoying this. I think having that mirror put in front of you and really, you know, understanding. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do this for attorneys all the time, but it's now...
It's different to be in your seat. Yes. It's one thing to be the observer and another thing to be the observee.
Exactly, but mm-hmm. I'm taking it all in, so...
Yeah, you're doing great. And one thing I think that I noticed, too, I made a note here that in your Tell Me About Yourself statement, there was an awkward pause after Arthur Anderson because you didn't quite know what to say. You said, you know, there was like that Enron thing. I would just make it... you could gloss over it and say, you know, I started my career with a financial institution that was amazing. It got my feet wet in the corporate world. I really loved it. Eventually, I transitioned over into a job where I did guerrilla marketing. And I feel like having gone from point A to point B really took me full circle and gave me a more well-rounded viewpoint. And eventually I wanted to culminize all those skills into getting back into corporate, which is when I met my mentor, mm-hmm. and then kind of tie it all in from there. Because that one, you started high and then it just kind of fizzled. Mm-hmm. And there, like Allison said, I think if you tie in some examples, the fascinating thing, and I was going to bring this up, Allison at the end asked you, what was your greatest achievement? What I tell job seekers is, regardless if you're ever asked that question, why should we hire you? What was your greatest achievement? Give me an example of a time where you were successful. It's your job to block and bridge to those points throughout the whole interview. Always. So the minute they ask you, tell me about yourself. How was your drive over here? What's the weather like? Look for opportunities to share reasons they might want to hire you or achievements you're proud of. And it's just naturally going to be like, oh my God, wow, Oscar's the guy we need.
Absolutely. And I think that the tell me about yourself started a little earlier than I think it needed to, where you mentioned the sophomore and then the junior and then right. the senior. So you might just say, you know, it started in college. I was lucky enough to know what I wanted to do early on.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. And there was one word that you used. There are sometimes trigger words that we don't even realize can elicit a negative response from the interviewer. And you started to say something about there were big challenges at the trade magazine. And so the word challenge just naturally connotates something negative. So you want to always be playing that yes and game of keeping it positive. So you might want to flip it and say, gosh, when I went to the trade magazine, that's probably where I learned the most. One of the things that the trade magazine was working on is they didn't have distributorship yet, and all they had was advertising money, and so how I overcame that was da-da-da-da-da, so you don't necessarily need to use the word challenge because okay. you don't want it to derail the interview or distract the person.
Mm-hmm. I did hear some negative things come up a few times where the micromanage, it's the same thing to say, I don't want to micromanage is to say, I want to give my team a lot of autonomy.
Oh, I love that. Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Ding, ding, ding.
And so it's the same thing. You're saying the exact same thing, but it doesn't have the negative connotation.
And something about that, too, that I think is important to mention, because I made a note about the micromanage thing, too. To me as an employer, if somebody says, oh, I don't like to micromanage, and I'm with you 100% because I do agree that creative people need a little bit more leeway, but what you might want to say is, gosh, you know what I've noticed is in order to have the best creative efforts happen, I tend to be the sort of person where I give the people on my team a lot of autonomy, and then I guide them as necessary. If I notice that there's something that they could use a little bit of assistance on, then it's my job to mentor and guide them and make sure to pull it back in so it doesn't seem like whoever your direct reports are have free reign.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it was the same with the database had a bad reputation.
That's an interesting one.
So I noticed that too because I thought, oh, yikes. But you know, it wasn't meeting the team's need. Jennifer said it was misunderstood. People weren't utilizing it to its full capacity. Maybe something like there was resistance around using it.
So yeah. Stay away from the negatives, even when it's speaking of other things unrelated to me.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You don't even realize just at a subconscious level, this is stuff that we're consciously perceiving. And then at a subconscious level, there's all sorts of little intricacies that we obviously can't pick up on mm-hmm. our subconscious. But the brain is going to go negative, bad, micromanage, et cetera, that the brain is filing those away in the interview. And you don't want any of those keywords to be associated with your interview, just like you wouldn't want those keywords to be associated with a marketing campaign.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it can seem... even if it's not your intention, like you're quick to judge things. Like, you say, that's bad, right? And that's not the way it is. But we speak that way conversationally so much. It's like Jennifer and I have used the example, I dealt with these people. But dealt with is never, you never enjoy dealing with anything, right? But we always say, oh, I'm dealing with this thing right now. And so it's just that little tweak of being aware of the things that might be perceived as negative, even though it's not like you're saying them with a big scowl, but just like kind of tuning in.
Yeah, just bring awareness. Mm-hmm. One little thing that was fascinating that was when Allison asked you a question, she said, okay, specifically, so for our firm, we need somebody who's going to bring in revenue. Give me an example. Huge red flag for me as the employer. You gave me the example of the pet-related thing from 10 years ago, which is non-legal. So if I'm a law firm and you tie in an example that's 10 years ago and it's not legal, I'm going to go, why isn't he giving me an example from firm A, B, or C? So I would really tie, like, obviously, if you're tying in something specific to advertising revenue, you can definitely tie it in. But with regards to when somebody says, hey, where are you going to bring in revenue or how have you done that, tie in as recent an example as you have available to you, because that's going to land more. Like, whenever we get somebody who gives us a reference from 10 years ago, nobody cares to hear about that reference. Most of the time, they don't care about what you did 10 years ago. They want to know what you did recently for them. So I know we only have a couple minutes left. Allison, what are your thoughts? Any other?
No, I mean, overall, I think you did a great job. We need to just grab those things that you did a wonderful job with and figure out how to insert them all over the place. Like, we need to feel your excitement for the things that you're excited about, because you're clearly excited to do this job. And it's obviously something that you really, really enjoy.
It really is a passion.
Mm-hmm. And we need to grab those examples and figure out, like Jennifer said, how to get them incorporated in your tell me about yourself. So maybe we spend less time on this job, I did this, and more like, this job, I really learned a lot about this, and I was excited to insert result. Then the next job, I got to work with my mentor. Or maybe, you know, before even I asked why you jumped, you can say, and I left this job, I had an amazing mentor, and he brought me with him to his next firm. So you can kind of craft the story that way. And then it sets the tone, not that you've changed jobs, but that you are such a valuable commodity. That you moved from one place to another because someone couldn't bear to be without you.
I took that to heart. I wrote it down when you said stay not away from the facts, but less facts and more heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's brilliant.
Yes.
The most heart that I saw come through, aside from at the end with the CRM thing, blew my mind, and I started and circled it. I loved what you said when you said, I'm so excited to go from having 100 attorney firm that I've worked with to a 20 attorney firm where I get to spend that quality one-on-one time with the attorneys and get to know their needs. For me as an employer, that made my little antenna go up, and I'm like, ding, 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 we have a winner, because I thought that was so personalized and so heartfelt and authentic that it really resonated.
Absolutely. And I thought your questions were great. I would be mindful of time. If your interviews are going over and then you're asking for a tour, I would just be a little mindful of that to make sure that people don't feel the pressure. Mm. But I loved your questions. I thought they were really thoughtful questions and questions that show that you know what to ask and you want to really learn kind of what you're getting into. And on that note, I've been reading articles lately about kind of a controversial end of interview question.
Let's hear it. I'm game for controversial.
I'm
Let's
a little
hear it.
Torn, so I'd love to hear Jennifer's thoughts on it too, and your thoughts as a candidate. So there's a school of thinking that says at the end of the interview, one of the questions should be, do you have any reservations about my candidacy?
That's my favorite. And I was just, I've always said, in fact, that was the first thing I was going to say when Oscar wrapped up, because for me as an employer, I still had a reservation about back when you were explaining your reasons for leaving, I was not 100% clear about your reason for having a gap between August of 2012 to March of 2013. And that was the first thing I was going to say. So as far as controversial, I'm with it 110%.
Okay.
My exact verbiage that I always recommend a job seeker pursues, you finish the interview, you've asked all your questions, you've asked about culture, etc. You say, thank you so much, Allison. I've really enjoyed the opportunity to meet with you. You've really answered all my questions. That said, Were there any concerns or hesitations or questions you had that I didn't get to answer for you about my background? Mm. That, from the day I first started recruiting, like 12, 13, 14 years ago, has always been my favorite way to end the interview, because that way you don't kick yourself on the way home and say, shoot, I forgot to mention about this. Damn, I forgot to mention that. Mm-hmm. And it really gives you that opportunity to address any concerns in person. It is always my favorite way to end an interview. Okay. So thank you for bringing that up.
No, that's wonderful. And so what I hear from candidates is, that sounds so scary. I could never do that. So you have to be really, really
courageous.
Prepared.
Yeah.
Yes,
right.
And courageous to ask that question. How would you feel, Oscar, about asking that question?
I think I'm going to incorporate that.
I love that.
Especially for what I do. I think it does open the door for the conversation to go longer, but it's one of those memorable moments again. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm going to incorporate that.
I think it does more good than harm, mm-hmm. because the amount of people I know who come to me after an interview, oh, Jennifer, I forgot to mention X or Y, and I just feel like it kind of closes it. It gives you that full circle, close the loop sort of experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm so happy that you brought that up.
Great. I'm pleased to hear you.
Speaking
answer.
Of your wonderful advice, Allison, tell us about your upcoming webinar. It's on October 4th and 8th, right?
Yes, October 4th and 8th, I am hosting a webinar called Job Search Essentials, Tools to Take Control of Your Search. And really what I want it to do is help people feel confident about either starting a new search or reviving a search that has gone on for too long. So it's going to be October 4th and October 8th. So it's a Tuesday and a Saturday. And you can learn more at my website. It's allisongarrido.com/webinar. So it's free and open to anybody who'd like to sign in.
That's amazing that you're offering that. And speaking of which, our show next week, this is very important because we're going to be talking about it. I have Shannon Leishner returning to the show, who's one of the top 10 most trusted spiritual advisors in the world. And it just so happened that October 3rd, and this is what really fascinates me, is from many different spiritual disciplines. Many of you may know it's Rosh Hashanah, and actually in the Hindu faith and other faiths, everybody across multiple religious and spiritual disciplines agrees that is the day to draw down all of the positive energy and prosperity for the coming year. So I tell all of our listeners out there, just bring extra consciousness. We're going to do an entire show about this for next Monday, I believe it's October 3rd, mm-hmm. and we're going to be talking about how can you bring awareness and attention and consciousness. And my favorite thing about learning about this a few years ago is that during that 24-hour window, I really bring extra awareness and attention and kindness and compassion and love to everybody I come into contact with. And then my favorite thing is to continue it, not just that 24 hours, but what would life be like if we were that kind, that compassionate, that aware and conscious and mindful every day of the year? And so I challenge all the listeners out there, have it be a game. Try it out for that 24-hour period. And if it fits you, then you can try it out for the rest of the year. So that show will be on October 3rd. And I'm so excited to tell our listeners, many of you may know I've done this program called Landmark Education. I just got word from Landmark's PR team that we are going to have a Landmark Forum leader here to talk about what it is that you can do to live a fulfilled and empowered life. And so I'm going to be interviewing a Landmark Forum leader on Monday, October 10th. And of course, if you ever miss the show live, you can tune in and find us on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. And I also have a blog called getyourselfthejob.com, which has hundreds of articles that I've written that are all free and available online. So Oscar, any last parting thoughts for you as our guest today?
No, thank you. I just thought this was great. I think it's always good to have that mirror put in front of you and really assess.
Yeah. Awesome.
The good and the bad.
A joy. I'm so happy and delighted that you could be here today. And Allison, it's always a privilege and a delight to have your time here to share with us and conduct these amazing mock interviews.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So to all of our listeners out there, go enjoy an ice cream cone for us. Stay cool and have a wonderful rest of your week, Los Angeles.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.